what it is, but it's very cute.
With this?
Yeah.
My little tripod.
But I know, but what is the whole deal?
I'm on Facebook Live, so it holds the camera. I'm being, here, you're being filmed. Say hi to everyone. Okay, so good evening, everyone. Today is October 30th, Monday, October 30th, and we are here in Houston, Texas, at United Orthodox Synagogues for our second in our five-week mini-series on Agadot of the Talmud, the non-halachic aspects of the Talmud. And today we are going to meet Mar Zutra. Mar Zutra, I'll give you a little bit of background on Mar Zutra. Mar Zutra is a sixth generation Amora, meaning he is in the Talmud, but not from the Mishnaic times, from later. This sixth generation is generally understood to be from the year 375 to 425, and Mar Zutra lived in Bavel. Okay, not in Eretz Yisrael. Up until now, last week we studied a Tana from Eretz Yisrael. Now we're in an Amora, which is another later Talmudic figures, again between the year 375 and 425. Just to give you a sense of what was going on in the world around that time, this is when the Roman Empire was split in the year 395 between Rome and the Byzantine Empire. So that's what's going on in the general world, and we're going to study a very, very short story regarding Mar Zutra, and then we are going to try to unpack it and understand it from a few different angles. Okay, so let's just read the story. It's from Bava Metzia, Chaf Dalad Amud Aleph, 24a in Tractate Bava Metzia. And this is the section of the tractate that's dealing with how to identify the owner of lost property. Okay, that if an item is found, what steps need to be taken and what needs to be present in order to be able to return the property to its rightful owner. Yeah.
Before you start, I'm sorry to interrupt. I asked Marilyn the other day, I remember the coin. We talked about Abraham last week, but I couldn't remember the first
story was
Ashrei.
Right. Anyone who says Ashrei three times is guaranteed the
thank
world
you.
To come. Thank you, Marilyn.
You.
All right, excellent.
You're on a roll today, girl.
Okay, so today we meet Mar Zutra, and I titled this class Mar Zutra, Talmudic Detective, and we'll see why in a moment. So again, Bava Metzia, Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph, Mar Zutra, Chasida, Agniv Le, Kasa, De Kaspa Me Ushpiza. So the Gemara relates the following story. A silver goblet was stolen from the host of Mar Zutra Chasida. Let me just make one other comment. Many people assume that Mar Zutra and Mar Zutra Chasida are the same person. Not everyone does. Right? The person in this story, his name is Mar Zutra Chasida. Mar Zutra the pious. And what I just told you about where Mar Zutra lived and when he lived, that was assuming that Mar Zutra is the same person as is in this story, Mar Zutra Chasida. And I think later on we'll be able to see why it may very well be that it is the same person. Okay? So a silver goblet was stolen from the host of Mar Zutra Chasida. So presumably Mar Zutra was being billeted somewhere. And while he was there, or at some time, a silver cup, a becher, as we like to call it, right, a kiddush cup maybe, whatever it was stolen from the host. Okay, next, Chazya le'ahu bar be'rav demashi yadei v'nagiv biglima dechavre. Mar Zutra saw a certain student of Torah who washed his hands and dried them on the cloak of another. Okay, picture, you know, you're standing at the washing station, right? We have two sinks, and you're washing next to someone, and you grab the person's sweater next to you, and you dry their hand, you dry your hands instead of instead of taking a paper towel, you dry your hands on the person's sweater who's washing their hands next to you. Okay. So Amar Hainu Ha Delo ichbat le amamona dechavre. So Marzutra declares this person, right, who washed his hands on someone else's cloak, does not care about the property of another. Kafte, they caught this student, and the commentaries explain that they may have interrogated the student and started asking them all sorts of questions about the missing goblet. Ve'ude, and he confessed.
Did they base him that he stole the goblet because he dried his hand in somebody else's coat?
Well, I think that's the implication of the story, right? That Rav Zutra posited that since this person did not care about someone else's property because he had the nerve to dry his hands on someone else's coat, that Marzutra suspected that he was the guy. Okay, and so then they arrested him, whatever they did, they caught him, and they asked him questions, and then he finally fessed up. So if that's in fact what Marzutra was doing, then Marzutra was right. Right? His intuition seems to have been correct in this case. Okay? Yeah, sure.
Frontal lobe syndrome. People whose frontal lobe do not work properly will do stuff like that.
Will steal?
They'll, like, they're just, you know, in my classes that I go to. So they describe this woman who, she was perfectly normal like you and me, and then somewhere in her middle 50s, frontal lobe starts to deteriorate.
Right.
And so she goes to work, and you're eating a sandwich, she grabs the sandwich from you.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, this person was not old. It was a student.
What I'm getting at is people who will do these certain things.
Right. Okay, it could be, but it also could be that the person just is a bum. Right? It doesn't have to be, right? Not every thief suffers from...
But a person that's that antisocial...
but this is not a situation like that. He didn't do anything, like he stole the. Okay, all right. Anyway, so Marzutra, you know, posits that this person stole, and they interrogate him, and he's right. Okay, so this is a very very brief narrative. It's four sentences. I broke it up into the four parts just so it would give us an easier opportunity to look at it. But let's first of all look at some interesting linguistic aspects of this text, which is not so easy to see in the English, but in the Aramaic, and this is one of the differences between last week's text and this week's text. Last week's text was from a Tana. They are from Eretz Yisrael. So last week's texts were in Hebrew. This is from Bavel, from Babylonia, and therefore it is an Aramaic. Okay, so that's why maybe the language seemed a little...
What exactly is Aramaic? Is it a form of Hebrew?
No,
it's a whole different
language? Yeah, it's an old different language. It has some... It's a Semitic language, so it definitely has similarities. There are similarities here. Like, for example, the word that's highlighted in the first sentence, Agniv, right, that's stolen, right, from, in Hebrew, it's ganav.
Right.
So there are certain similarities. Kaspa, the first word on the second line, is kesef, right, which is silver or money, right? So there are many similarities, but it's its own language. Okay, so Marzutra, hold on, someone's asking me a question here on Facebook. Let me see what that is. Oh, no, that's not related to this. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so you could see the highlighted word in the first sentence, agniv, right, is, you could see, has the same letters, similar sound to the word vinagiv, which is in the third line. It's also highlighted, right? So you could just see that it's written in a way to have a certain flow or a certain ring to it, and you even see it in the third and fourth line. In the third line, the highlighted word is ichpat, meaning he didn't care about the property of others. And the last line, kafte, right, also has a similar sound. So these play on it's a play on words. There are other words which were presumably available to the author of the story, but this play on words gives this text a certain cohesion, right, and a certain flow to it. Okay, we could also now look at the actual action of the student, right? What's the student doing that gives him away to Marzutra?
In public.
What's he engaged in? Yeah, what's the student engaged in? Right, he's washing his hands. Presumably, Jews often, right, wash their hands for a mitzvah.
Right,
maybe he's washing his hands before he's about to daven, or maybe he's washing his hands before he's about to eat, or maybe he's washing his hands when he woke up. Whatever the case may be, it's not 100% clear here. But the fact of the matter is that he's referred to as a student of Torah, right? Bar Bei Rav, which means the student of the house of the rabbi, meaning he's a Torah student, right? He's washing his hands, but immediately within the context of washing his hands, what does he do?
He sins. Yeah.
Right? Right? So it could be, right? So what is Marzutra seeing in this guy?
Is that a sin or just a yud?
Well, Rab Marzutra thought it was, well, Marzutra says he seems to not care about the property of another when he dries his hands on someone. So he's not saying it out. It seems like it's akin to stealing.
He might not care about the property.
Right, he doesn't care.
I need this, and I'll give it back later. But right now, I need it. So.
Right. So in the context of doing the mitzvah, he's engaged in some inappropriate, maybe sinful behavior. So what does Marzutra see, though? Marzutra sees this person who's engaged in a mitzvah, but then also sort of finishes it off with something which is wrong. So
there's something not normal about this person.
Right. But externally, Marzutra is seeing that this guy has all the external trappings of someone who is doing the mitzvot, following the Torah. Right. But right. Hopefully, when no one's looking. Right, he like sneakily dries his hands on someone else's coattails. Right, he tries to get away with something which may not be appropriate. So Marzutra not only perhaps right, not only sees in him inappropriate behavior, he sees in him duplicitous behavior. Right, he's passing himself off as an observant person, but then he goes ahead and he dries his hands on someone else's garment.
Just one more question. You call him Mar Zutra. Is Mar for Mr. and his name is Zutra Hasida?
Yeah, Mar is Master.
Master or Mr.
Master. Master. And again, the question is this the same person as the other Mar Zutra that's often in the Talmud, or is this a different person? We'll come back to that. So it's not only that Mar Zutra Hasida sees him washing his hands, meaning it's not only that he dried his hands on someone else's garment that sort of gets Marzutra Hasida thinking that maybe this guy's a thief. It's that he's duplicitous. He's sneaky, right? He's trying to pass himself off as one thing, but he's really something else. And Marzutra's saying, hey, maybe the person who stole this goblet also hid it. It wasn't like a smash and grab. It was obviously something that was hidden. So maybe that's what gets Marzutra Hasida thinking that maybe, in fact, this is the guy. Right at first glance, it appears that the student is fulfilling a mitzvah of washing his hands, and drying them. He does an avera. Okay, now. Let's also think about the following. Who is the main character of the story. Marzutra is the main character of the story. In fact, three of the four, all of them begin, actually, four of the four begin with a story, with something about Marzutra, right? Marzutra chasida agnivle kasa de kaspa. A silver, right? Margut, literally translated would be Marzutra had a goblet, a silver goblet stolen from him. That would be a literal translation. He saw, meaning Marzutra saw this person washing his hands and drawing them on someone else's garment. He said, Marzutra said, this person doesn't care about someone's property. Marzutra caught the student and bound him, right? But if you look at the first line, it's very strange the way that it is written out, right? Because really who's the main character of the first sentence, you would argue, who should it be?
The host who had the, right?
But what does the Gemara do? The Gemara goes out of its way to write the story in a way that Marzutra ends up being the main character of the story, which I think what the Gemara is trying to do here is point us towards some particular behavior and particular insight or ability that Marzutra had, right? No, the story is written specifically in order for us to be able to focus on Marzutra. Okay,
so Marzutra. Is that a certain type of person? Is his name written?
That's his name. Marzutra Chasida. That was his name.
Chasida.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Marzutra Chasida.
Not a title?
Yeah. Mr. Chasida the Pious. That was his name. Mr. Chasida the Pious.
That's like when we say young lady.
Okay. So let's look at Marzutra's character here. Okay. Marzutra has a particular character. Well, I'll ask you, right? Again, Marzutra was a guest somewhere, and the guest has their goblet stolen. What would you expect to happen next?
They search for it.
Who?
The host,
right? You would think, exactly, Marilyn, you would think that, all right, I'm staying at your house, and while I'm staying there, someone steals your car. Okay, that's very disturbing, but you, presumably, would call the police and file a police report, and they would start looking for your car, right? But now, it's possible that happened in this story. But what also happened is that Marzutra's zealousness to catch the criminal overtakes and to completely washes away anything that the actual owner of the cup does. The owner of the cup is erased from the story. All we know is that there was a host, he had a cup, and the cup's gone. We don't know anything about the host. Marzutra, his personality, right, overpowers anything else that may have happened in this story.
Or when the goblet was stolen, and then he saw the student doing with his wife, he put it together. Maybe this guy stole the goblet.
Of course that's what he did. But the Gemara makes a point of not telling us what the owner did. Right? Because I think it's trying to focus us that Marzutra was very sensitive. Right? He was very concerned.
He was embarrassed that somebody in the group stole this goblet.
That's interesting. Hold on. I'll come back to that in a second. I'm suggesting that he was just an incredibly sensitive person. Right? That we see that in two ways. First of all, he immediately jumps into action. You see it's on his mind, right? It's on his mind that this person lost their cup, because as soon as he sees the guy washing his hands and drawing them on someone else's cloak, he immediately surmises that this must be the guy. So it's obvious, it's on his mind. He's walking around saying to himself, how am I going to figure out who stole this guy's cup, right? So we see that Marzutra is incredibly sensitive in trying to find out who stole this person's coat, and we see he has another type of sensitivity, and that is he had a unique gift, right, to see things maybe differently than everyone else saw them. And that's, and that, by the way, we see it in the language, right? Again, the lots of different languages were, or words were available. But if you look at the second line, Chazye lehahu beirav, Marzutra saw, right? He saw it. He had an, it doesn't just mean he had an insight here, right? Marzutra, he had a sort of a very, very well sharpened ability to derive one thing from the other. So we have two levels of sensitivity here. One is he just seems to be very concerned about the lost person's goblet, and he has this high sensitivity that despite that, like some of you said, what the student did was a minor offense. But Marzutra is able to put it together and say, well, this minor offense may be a window into the personality of the student. Okay, Marilyn.
Is he a teacher? Could it have been one of his students?
So that connects actually to what Ron said. Ron said that maybe Marzutra is embarrassed, right? He's embarrassed that a student of Torah may have stolen this cup. Yeah, Marzutra was a teacher. Yeah, sure. And so go ahead. So what?
Well, no, this may have been a student that he brought along with him. He's a guest. Maybe he brought the student as a guest.
But then wouldn't have been, then why would he have to go, that would be an important part of the story, no? Meaning if, then we wouldn't need the whole washing the hands thing. Then Marzutra would have said to the student who was with him, hey, did you steal the cup?
No, because when he saw his student do that, kind of the bells went off.
Okay, I don't know, we don't know. We don't know, but it could be, yeah, yes.
I'm coming at it from totally different.
Good.
Years in the classroom.
Okay, excellent.
Never would I make this assumption. And it's like saying, Johnny is such a big troublemaker. Oh,
right.
My God. I can't.
I'll tell you, my teachers made the assumption all the time. I'm just putting it out
teachers.
There.
Okay, so now all of a sudden, there's a commotion. There's a commotion in the back. And Johnny happens to be there, but I don't see him doing anything. And from where I sit, it would be wrong of me to jump all over him and assume that he did whatever's going on now, because in previous times he's done something. And kids often, they will do it again.
Right,
again,
right.
Because what the heck? I'm going to be accused of it anyway.
So you think that Mars, but he was right, by the way. He's vindicated. In this case,
okay.
Right? He was right, but you're saying
I don't like
that
the jump.
You don't like the jump. Okay, all right. That's a fair point. Although maybe then it leads to Marilyn's point that maybe this was a student of Marzutra, who he had a sense of already.
If you're assuming
we don't know that
student,
for sure.
You're assuming you know him, but you still didn't see him take that goblet.
Yeah, but he may
right?
be embarrassed. Because he brought these students.
But isn't this good police work, though? Isn't this good police work that a crime has been committed? So now you're looking to see, are there any other people who have... Are there any people who are in the neighborhood and who may be engaged in some sort of suspicious behavior that could connect them or their personality, right? You know what he's doing, Marzutra? He is, what's the word? He's a profiler. Right? Marzutra is a criminal profiler.
Sometimes they're wrong, and they
yes.
stop
it's
looking for the real criminal because this guy, his behavior in the past.
That's true. Although, what do you think the Gemara is trying to tell us by the fact that it tells us that he was successful, that he was right? Kafte v'ude. They bound him. Would some say they interrogated him, they caught him, they asked him questions, and he confessed. What do you think the Gemara is trying to tell us about that? What's the message in that?
When you see somebody doing antisocial behavior, you know he does other antisocial behavior.
By the way, this actually reminds me, this reminds me of an article I read a few years ago about policing, right? Where there were neighborhoods that were ridden with all sorts of crime, serious crime, but the police started cracking down on the petty stuff, like window smashing and tire slashing and petty shoplifting. And when the police started cracking down on that, sort of the whole the whole character of the neighborhood started changing. Things started to look better. People started to act differently. And then the more serious crimes also started to happen less frequently. So maybe Marzutra is an early practitioner of that, right? He's going to see someone doing something. It's interesting, right? It's an interesting... set aside the issue of the profiling, whether it's right or wrong. It's interesting that Marzutra, as soon as he saw someone doing something as insignificant as drying his hands, it really bothered him to the effect that it connected him to a much bigger crime. And maybe there's something noble about that we shouldn't say, oh, it's just.
Did he say anything when he drew it? I mean, you don't know if he went over to him and said, you know, this wasn't a great thing to do, wiping your hands on somebody else's cloak and go from there to there.
We did. He did. It says, Kafte Ude, he bound him, interrogated him, and he got the truth out of him.
But it was only after he saw, he didn't say anything at that moment.
We don't know. Maybe at that moment is when he got him. We don't know.
I could be in Barbara's kitchen, dressed to the nines, going to the White House.
Right.
And I'm washing my hands, and I don't have a towel close, and I don't want to get anything in my gorgeous silk gown. And Barbara's standing there, and she's got a schmata sweater on, and I take it up. Barbara, I'll wash it later. Please, I got to get out of here.
That's different.
You just don't know.
But you're talking to me, and you're telling me what you're doing. You're not doing it.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, let's move. You're right. This story leaves a lot of unanswered questions, but I'm still wondering what the Gemara's message is, right? What's the Gemara's message when it tells us that he was right? Right, it could be this type of policing story, right? That I don't know, when there's smoke, there's fire, or this type of approach. But I certainly understand the danger in it, right? That it could he could have had the wrong guy again, which makes me believe, sort of leads me to what Marilyn said. Maybe he knew the student. There was something else to it, although that's left out. That's entirely left out of the story. But I think the Gemara is trying to point out that there is a certain insight that Marzutra Chasida had here on two levels of sensitivity. One is he really was upset that this person lost the cloak. Lost the cup. And he really wanted to help. And he had this particular sensitivity to being able to find out who did it by looking at the overall behavior of the person.
Wait, just how sensitive is he? He bound the student.
So that's why I said some of the commentaries say doesn't really mean bound. Kafti, they caught him, asked him questions. This particular translation, which was available online, says he bound. But I looked it up in some of the other commentaries, and some say they basically just, you know, sort of interrogated him. Not waterboarding. But they just asked him some questions, right? Okay. Now, by the way, this, right away, this story may remind you of a biblical text, okay? And the biblical text that it may remind you of is when there was another cup that was stolen, right? And that's in the story of Joseph and the brothers. In this case, however, right, what is in that case, Joseph plants the cup. But there are some similarities, okay? So we know the whole story, right? I put it on the page. I thought we would get to it, and we will come back. But before you turn ahead, both stories there's a similarity to both stories. Both stories have a major crime, and both stories have a minor crime. So let's just look at the story that we've just read. What's the major crime in the story of Marzutra Chasida? The major crime is stealing the cup. And the minor crime is wiping his hands. In the story of Yosef and his brothers, even though the cup was planted, right? What's the major crime in that story?
Selling
Joseph. And what's the minor crime? Is stealing the goblet, which they didn't really steal. Now. What's really interesting is we were a little uncomfortable with this idea that Marzutra Chasida saw a minor crime and immediately attached it to the major crime. But that's exactly what happens in this other stolen goblet story. Look on page 2, verse number 15. Okay? So, first of all, this is in type. First of all, before we get to that question, look at source number, at verse number 15. Vayomer lahem Yosef. Again, they don't know he's Yosef yet. Vayomer lahem Yosef, ma hamaseh hazeh asher asitem. What have you done? Halo yedatem ki nachesh yinachesh ish asher kamoni. Do you not know that a man like me practices divination? Meaning, don't you know I would have figured out that you stole my cup? Who is he acting like in the story?
His
compare the two stories. Marzutra Chasida. Meaning Marzutra Chasida, without saying it, the Gemara is telling us he had the ability to figure this out. And that's exactly what Yosef is telling his brothers. Don't you think I would have figured this out? Now, it's all a ruse. But you can't help but notice the similarities between the stories. Marzutra Chasida uses physical evidence to figure out that the brothers did something wrong, even though they didn't, okay? And in our story, Marzutra Chasida uses evidence, which he sees, to figure out, although this time it's real, right, that that this guy stole the cup, okay? Now, now we'll come back to the original question, which is really interesting, right, which is we have a major crime and a minor crime, and because Marzutra saw this kid do a minor crime, right? He was able to surmise that he was the perpetrator of the major crime. Now look at what the brothers say in verse 16. Read it for yourself. What do the brothers say?
They want to know how they can prove they're taking it as a collective crime down now. That wasn't
God has uncovered the crime of your servants. What crime is that? The brothers say, we're being punished for what?
Selling
Yosef, right? They are attaching. Again, they don't know what's going on. They're saying, oh my God, this is happening to us because we sold Yosef. They are making a direct connection between what they did and what's happening to them now. That's what it says, right? Ha'elokim matza et avon avadecha. God has uncovered the crime of your servants. So there's also this literary similarity, right? That Marzutra Chasida, through the realization of one crime, attaches it to the other crime. And this is what the brothers do. Again, there wasn't a crime in their case, in the second case.
Why can't you say they were referring to the crime of the goblets? Right? How do you know they were referring to the crime of selling Joseph?
They didn't do it.
I know they didn't do it, but they're being accused of it.
Yeah, but it said uncover the crime.
No, because they're saying, what can we say to God? They're not talking to Yosef. They're saying, what can we say to God? God is punishing us. For what?
We didn't do anything.
For selling Yosef.
But they did not. No.
They had a guilty conscience.
Okay.
No, they didn't. They knew they sold Yosef.
Yeah.
So that's what they're saying.
But they did not know it was related
to. Of course. That's exactly the point. They're saying, why is this happening to us? Why are we being implicated for this crime that we didn't do?
Yeah.
It must be because we sold Yosef.
Oh, okay. So they felt guilty.
That's what the pasuk means. That's what the verse means. It can't. That's what it means. Mano marla doni manadaber mistake. How can we prove our innocence? Right? How can we prove our innocence? We can't. It's a rhetorical question. We can't prove our innocence because we're guilty. We're guilty of selling our brother. That's all they did. They didn't steal the cup. They knew they didn't steal the cup. Right? So they can't prove their innocence any other way at all. Right? God has uncovered the crime of your servants, all of them. Right? Whoever was involved in selling Yosef. Here we are then slaves of my Lord. So just like in the Marzutra Chasida story, where there's a connection between the minor crime and the major crime that Marzutra does, in the Yosef story, the brothers make a connection in reverse, right? First, in their case, came, the major crime and then the minor crime, okay? So also, let's just also just look at this other interesting statement in source number 3 on page number 4. This is from Rabbi Dr. Yonatan Feintuch. He says, another link between the two narratives is to be found in the fact that in the sale of Yosef and the subsequent events, Yosef's garments play an important role. The striped coat that is removed from him and the garment that is torn and remains in the hands of Potiphar's wife. Recalling the garment used to wipe the student's hands. Right? There's two cloaks, right? Each story has a goblet. Each story has a major crime and a minor crime. And each story also has a coat. Right? In this case, in the case of Yosef, his ketonet pasim, his coat of many colors, of stripes, and in the case of the story of Marzutra Chasida, the coat that the student used, that belonged to someone else to dry his hands. Or the dipping of Yosef's coat in blood may also recall the wiping of water on the fellow student's cloak. In addition, it should be borne in mind that Yosef is, in a certain sense, a lost article, or to state it more accurately, a stolen article, which ultimately returns to its owner, Yaakov. Right? So, the more you think about this, and the literary connections between this story and the Yosef story, it's really amazing. The obvious one is the stolen goblet. But then you could uncover minor crime, major crime, connecting the two, the cloak, that Yaakov was a stolen item, Yosef himself was a stolen item, and the cup in the Marzutra Chasidah story was a stolen item. So here we're seeing an example of where, and the argument being made is that this is not an accident, right? Is that we have an agadah, that there are different types of agadot. Some agadot will use verses from the Bible in them, and then it pays to go back and look at the whole chapter of that Bible to see if there are any other similarities or ideas in the chapter of the Bible that match up to the story in the Talmud. Here, in this example, there are no verses, right? It's 4 lines, it's boom, 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 but there are very clear, once you dig a little bit, right, literary similarities to another chapter in the Bible. So sometimes the connection to the Bible is not there at all. It could just be a story. Sometimes the connection to the Bible is there because verses are used, and sometimes the connection to the Bible is there because of imagery that's used, which we have in this case. Okay, now, for the final few minutes, let's look at the rest of the context of this story, okay? This story comes right after the Mishnah in Masechet Bava Metzia that deals with, like I said before, what happens if one discovers a lost object? How can we go about returning it to the right person? Okay? So just very quickly, source number 4 on page 5. In a case where one discovers lost items, which found items belong to him, and for which items is one obligated to proclaim his find, so that the owner of the lost items can come and reclaim them. You find something, when are you allowed to keep it? And when do you have to make an announcement that you found it? Under what circumstances? So the Mishnah says, these found items belong to him. Gives a whole bunch of examples of found items that belong to the person who found them. And the reason is, at the end of that second paragraph on the left side, as they have no distinguishing marks that would enable their owners to claim them. This is the statement of Rabbi Meir. So you find some meat in the middle of the street. How's someone going to prove that it's theirs? Right? So you can keep it because there's no way to go ahead and find the owner. Okay? That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says, if one finds any lost item in which there is an alteration, he is obligated to proclaim it and find it. So let's say it's, baker's loaves, but they have, he gives an example. How so? If you found a round cake of pressed figs with an earthenware shard inside it, or a loaf of bread with coins inside it, he's obligated to proclaim it, because how many people are going to be able to, he'll say, I found the loaf of bread, come tell me it's yours. And the guy said, well, Did you find some broken pottery in the bread? Yes. That's mine, right? Because that's clearly something out of the ordinary. So if it's a plain loaf of bread, you can keep it. Right? You find the challah from Three Brothers, you can keep it. But if you find the challah that has, I don't know, chocolate chips, cinnamon, and cherries in it, and then you have to announce that someone lost the challah. And if the person says, I lost the challah with chocolate chips, cinnamon, and cherry, then you know it's theirs. Okay? Fair enough. Okay? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, if one finds any anpuria vessels, since their shape is uniform and they are indistinguishable, he is not obligated to proclaim his fine. That's what we're going to focus on in a minute. You find
that's
this...
Anpura.
Anpuria.
Yeah, no, but the English word...
Yeah, what is it?
This is something that holds water, an anpura.
Ah, it's a vessel, okay? And since they're all made the same way, I can't tell mine from yours, you can keep it, right? Because 1,000 people are going to claim they have one, you can't know where to say it. So the Gemara says, so there's something wrong, but on the bottom of page 5. The Mishnah teaches, okay, if one finds any anpuria vessels, he is not obligated to proclaim his find. The Gemara asks, what are anpuria vessels? Rav Yehuda says that Shmuel says they are new vessels, as the eye of its purchaser has not yet sufficiently seen them to be able to recognize them. Right? It's brand new. You buy a brand new Farberware pot from Bed Bath & Beyond, and I bought one. You can't tell mine from yours. We haven't gotten to know them yet. Okay? The Gemara asks, what are the circumstances? If there is a distinguishing mark on the vessel, when the eye of the purchaser has not yet sufficiently seen it, what of it? He can describe the mark. If there is no distinguishing mark on the vessel, then when the eye of the one who purchased them has sufficiently seen it, what of it? Meaning, what have you added to this? We already said, if there's a mark on it, you could claim it. If there's no mark on it, you can claim it. So the Gemara now concludes, no. Actually, it's a vessel in which there is no distinguishing mark, and the practical difference is with regard to returning the vessel to a Torah scholar on the basis of visual recognition. When the eye of the Torah scholar has sufficiently seen them, he is certain about them, and we return the lost eye to him on the basis of his description of the vessel. When the eye of the Torah scholar has not sufficiently seen them, he is not certain about them, and we do not return the lost item to him. Says Rabbi Yehuda, says that Shmuel says, with regard to these three matters alone, it is normal for sages to amend their statements and deviate from the truth. With regard to a tractate, if he's asked whether he studied a particular tractate, he can humbly say he did not. With regard to bed, if he is asked whether he slept in a particular bed, he may say that he did not, to avoid shame in case some unseemly residue is found on the bed. And he can lie with regard to a host, as one may say that he was not well received by a certain host to prevent everyone from taking advantage of the host. Those are the only three things Torah scholars are allowed to lie about, or the only three things that Torah scholars normally bend the truth on. You could assume that Torah scholars are telling the truth about everything else. What is the practical difference that emerges from this statement with regard to matters which Torah scholars deviate from the truth? Marzutra says, we were waiting for him. That's why I think it's the same guy. Because this story about Marzutra Chasida comes right after this. But there's another connection too. Marzutra says, the practical difference is with regard to returning a lost item on the basis of visual recognition. If we know about him that he alters his statements only with regard to these three matters, we return the lost item to him. But if he alters his statement with regard to other matters, we do not return the lost item to him. So, two things. Marzutra is likely the same guy as Marzutra Chasida. Maybe he's called Marzutra Chasida in our story because he acts with extra piety in the story by being so concerned. That's what Chasid means. He's pious. He's so concerned by the fact that his host lost his goblet. What's one of the three things, another literary connection, what's one of the three things that a Torah scholar lies about? Their host. Because they don't want to say, oh, I went to stay at the Lieberman's house and I had 90 thread count sheets and a pitcher of water at my table, and because then you're going to be bombarded. So I could say, well, it was all right. There's nothing special. Right? I'm allowed to lie because I want to protect you from being bombarded. So we have this other connection. He was a guest, Rav Zutra Chasida, and here he's a guest too. But what also is Mar Zutra Chasida? Mar Zutra Chasida is also the Torah scholar, and we know the Torah scholar only, you know, amends the truth and only doesn't seek to be totally truthful on three things, which could be another reason why, for most of us, we come back to what we started with. For most of us, making that jump about Mar Zutra Chasida and the kid is a bad idea, because maybe we are too personally involved, we have some issues, the kid's been a pain in my neck for the last 4 years, I can't separate out my subjective issues from this. But the status or the standard of a Torah scholar, we're being told, somehow they're able to rise above that. So maybe you're right. You and I shouldn't make a jump when we see someone drying their hands on someone else's garment, because I already don't like that person because they sat in my chair, they took too much chicken on the buffet line, whatever the case, maybe they're driving too fast in the parking lot, right? But someone who is of the stature of Mar Zutra Chasida, who in this story is held up as a chassid, right, as a pious person, right? Maybe he is able to. The question is, right? It gets dangerous when we decide that we are in the right the category of Mar Zutra Chasida. But that's what the Gemara is trying to tell us, right? By putting the story of the stolen goblet right after here, it's trying to make these connections between guest and host, Mar Zutra Chasida. Maybe he was capable, because otherwise Torah scholars are very, very careful to never deviate from the truth. And you're all right. This would have been a huge deviation from truth and fairness had he nabbed a guy who was totally innocent of the major crime and all he did was wash his hands. But maybe Mar Zutra Chasida is in this other category, and he had those special qualities that allowed him to engage in this type of detective work that is fraught with danger for the rest of us. So it could be the lesson of this Gemara is we shouldn't do this, right? The only reason that Mar Zutra was it, we should always give people the benefit of the doubt. Mar Zutra, maybe he had a little bit of a chush, a little bit more of a feeling, because he was, you know, he was a unique personality.
You said Torah scholars are permitted to lie about what?
No, it says that it doesn't say they're permitted. He says, I'll give you the exact language, okay. So I don't want it to be misinterpreted. On page 6, okay. It says the Hebrew is, well, the English is, Ron, it's right over here on page 6, with regard to a tractate. I'm sorry. With regard to these three matters alone, it is normal for sages to amend their statements. It doesn't even say lie. It says amend their statements. And the Hebrew is Behani tlati mili avidi rabban dimishanu bimilu. To change. Lishano. To change. So what are the changes? Again, the tractate that they studied, where they slept, and their host. Those are the things.
What about their host?
That they're allowed to, instead of saying, oh, this was the greatest hospitality I've ever seen, and they did all these great things, right? So they don't want people to take advantage of the host's hospitality. They're allowed to, they will from time to time downplay. Which is also just an interesting thing that also comes with. I guess you don't say it wasn't so great. You could say it was good.
We had a nice shot.
But you don't say. You don't go. You don't tell all the details, because then you're going to end up imposing on the host. Yeah.
And why does he say he didn't study a certain tractate?
Humility. Yeah.
You know,
humility.
Don't you say that story? You know, Gail Kramer Berry.
Yeah.
One day somebody was stuck in Manhattan for Shabbos. They were